Passage 56. Faster than sound. Once a year, a race is held for old cars. A lot of cars entered for this race last year, and there was a great deal of excitement just before it began. One of the most handsome cars was a Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost. The most unusual car was a Benz, which had only three wheels. Built in 1885, it was the oldest car taking part. After a great many loud explosions, the race began. Many of the cars broke down on the course, and some drivers spent more time under their cars than in them. A few cars, however, completed the race. The winning car reached a speed of 40 miles an hour, much faster than any of its rivals. It sped downhill at the end of the race, and its driver had a lot of trouble trying to stop it. The race gave everyone a great deal of pleasure. It was very different from modern car races, but no less exciting.
Passage 57. Can I help you, madam? A woman in blue jeans stood at the window of an expensive shop. Though she hesitated for a moment, she finally went in and asked to see a dress that was in the window. The assistant who served her did not like the way she was dressed. Glancing at her scornfully, he told her that the dress was sold. The woman walked out of the shop angrily and decided to punish the assistant next day. She returned to the shop the following morning, dressed in a fur coat, with a handbag in one hand and a long umbrella in the other. After seeking out the rude assistant, she asked for the same dress. Not realizing who she was, the assistant was eager to serve her this time. With great difficulty, he climbed into the shop window to get the dress. As soon as she saw it, the woman said she did not like it. She enjoyed herself, making the assistant bring almost everything in the window, before finally buying the dress she had first asked for.
Passage 58. A Blessing in Disguise. The tiny village of Frinley is said to possess a cursed tree. Because the tree was mentioned in a newspaper, the number of visitors to Frinley has now increased. The tree was planted near a church 50 years ago, but it is only in recent years that it has gained an evil reputation. It is said that if anyone touches the tree, he will have bad luck. If he picks a leaf, he will die. Many villagers believe that the tree has already claimed a number of victims. The vicar has been asked to have the tree cut down, but so far he has refused. He has pointed out that the tree is a useful source of income, as tourists have been coming from all parts of the country to see it. In spite of all that has been said, the tourists have been picking leaves and cutting their names on the tree trunk. So far, not one of them has been struck down by sudden death.
Passage 59. In or out? Our dog Rex used to sit outside our front gate and bark. Every time he wanted to come into the garden, he would bark until someone opened the gate. As the neighbors complained of the noise, my husband spent weeks training him to press his paw on the latch to let himself in. Rex soon became an expert at opening the gate. However, When I was going out shopping last week, I noticed him in the garden near the gate. This time, he was barking so that someone would let him out. Since then, he has developed another bad habit. As soon as he opens the gate from the outside, he comes into the garden and waits until the gate shuts. Then he sits and barks until someone lets him out. After this, he immediately lets himself in and begins barking again. Yesterday, my husband removed the gate, and Rex got so annoyed we have not seen him since.
Passage 60. The Future. At a village fair, I decided to visit a fortune teller called Madame Belinsky. I went into her tent, and she told me to sit down. After I had given her some money, she looked into a crystal ball and said, "A relation of yours is coming to see you. She will be arriving this evening and intends to stay for a few days. The moment you leave this tent, you will get a big surprise. A woman you know well will rush towards you. She will speak to you, and then she will lead you away from this place. That is all." As soon as I went outside, I forgot all about Madame Belinsky, because my wife hurried towards me. "Where have you been hiding?" she asked impatiently. "Your sister will be here in less than an hour, and we must be at the station to meet her. We are late already." As she walked away, I followed her out of the fair.
Passage 61. Dangerous Descent. In future, astronauts will be required to descend from a spaceship while it is still in space, and to return to it. The ability to do this will be necessary in future flights to distant planets. Scientists are now trying to discover if this is possible. The spaceship Astra, which left the Earth a short time ago, will be traveling 300 miles into space. At a certain point, the Astra will stop for a short time, and an astronaut will attempt to leave the stationary spaceship and then return to it. We shall not know whether the experiment has been successful until we have received a radio message. The first message is expected to arrive at 7 o'clock this evening. By that time, the Astra will have been flying through space for 17 hours and will have circled the Earth a great many times. When the first radio messages have been received, the results of the trip will be announced immediately.
Passage 62. After the fire. Firemen had been fighting the forest fire for nearly 3 weeks before they could get it under control. A short time before, great trees had covered the countryside for miles around. Now, smoke still rose up from the warm ground over the desolate hills. Winter was coming on, and the hills threatened the surrounding villages with destruction, for heavy rain would not only wash away the soil, but would cause serious floods as well. When the fire had at last been put out, the forest authorities ordered several tons of a special type of grass seed which would grow quickly. The seed was sprayed over the ground in huge quantities by aeroplanes. The planes had been planting seed for nearly a month when it began to rain. By then, however, in many places the grass had already taken root. In place of the great trees which had been growing there for centuries, patches of green had begun to appear in the blackened soil.
Passage 63. She was not amused. Geoffrey Hampden has a large circle of friends and is very popular at parties. Everybody admires him for his fine sense of humour. Everybody, that is, except his six-year-old daughter, Jenny. Recently, one of Geoffrey's closest friends asked him to make a speech at a wedding reception. This is the sort of thing that Geoffrey loves. He prepared the speech carefully and went to the wedding with Jenny. He had included a large number of funny stories in the speech, and of course, it was a great success. As soon as he had finished, Jenny told him she wanted to go home. Geoffrey was a little disappointed by this, but he did as his daughter asked. On the way home, he asked Jenny if she had enjoyed the speech. To his surprise, she said she hadn't. Geoffrey asked her why this was so, and she told him that she did not like to see so many people laughing at him. Passage 64. The Channel Tunnel. In 1858, a French engineer, Aimé Thomé de Gamont, arrived in England with a plan for a 21-mile tunnel across the English Channel. He said that it would be possible to build a platform in the centre of the channel. This platform would serve as a port and a railway station. The tunnel would be well ventilated if tall chimneys were built above sea level. In 1860, a better plan was put forward by an Englishman, William Lowe. He suggested that a double railway tunnel should be built. This would solve the problem of ventilation, for if a train entered this tunnel, it would draw in fresh air behind it. 42 years later, a tunnel was actually begun. If, at the time, the British had not feared invasion, it would have been completed. Recently, there has again been great interest in the idea of a channel tunnel. If it is built, it will connect Britain to Europe for the first time in history.
Passage 65. Jumbo versus the police. Last Christmas, the circus owner, Jimmy Gates, decided to take some presents to a children's hospital. Dressed up as Father Christmas and accompanied by a guard of honour of 6 pretty girls, he set off down the main street of the city, riding a baby elephant called Jumbo. He should have known that the police would never allow this sort of thing. A policeman approached Jimmy and told him he ought to have gone along a side street, as Jumbo was holding up the traffic. Though Jimmy agreed to go at once, Jumbo refused to move. 15 policemen had to push very hard to get him off the main street. The police had a difficult time, but they were most amused. "Jumbo must weigh a few tons," said a policeman afterwards, "so it was fortunate that we didn't have to carry him. Of course, we should arrest him, but as he has a good record, we shall let him off this time."
Passage 66. Cycling through the air. The Hatfield Puffin is a modern aeroplane. but its designer, Mr. John Wimpany, is finding it difficult to get it off the ground. The reason for this is that this plane is also a bicycle. Its pilot has to pedal hard to get it into the air. After Mr. Wimpany had the plane built, it was tested thoroughly. In 1961, it was the first man-powered aircraft to fly half a mile. While being flown by a champion amateur cyclist in 1963, the plane crashed on an airfield. Since then, Mr. Wimpany has had it rebuilt. He has had the length of the wings increased, so that they now measure 93 feet, almost as long as those of a Dakota. Many people have shown interest in this new and unusual sport. But though air cyclists may learn how to fly over short distances, and may, eventually, even get across the English Channel, it is doubtful whether they will ever cycle across the Atlantic.
Passage 67. Volcanoes. Harun Tatsiev, the Polish scientist, has spent his lifetime studying active volcanoes and deep caves in all parts of the world. In 1948, he went to Lake Kivu in the Congo to observe a new volcano, which he later named Kituro. Tatsiev was able to set up his camp very close to the volcano while it was erupting violently. Though he managed to take a number of brilliant photographs, he could not stay near the volcano for very long. He noticed that a river of liquid rock was coming towards him. It threatened to surround him completely, but Tatsiev managed to escape just in time. He waited until the volcano became quiet, and he was able to return 2 days later. This time, he managed to climb into the mouth of Kituro so that he could take photographs and measure temperatures. Tatsiev has often risked his life in this way. He has been able to tell us more about active volcanoes than any man alive.
Passage 68. Persistent. I crossed the street to avoid meeting him, but he saw me and came running towards me. It was no use pretending that I had not seen him, so I waved to him. I never enjoy meeting Bert Dykes. He never has anything to do. No matter how busy you are, he always insists on coming with you. I had to think of a way of preventing him from following me around all morning. "Hello, Bert," I said. "Fancy meeting you here." "Hello, Elizabeth," Bert answered. "I was just wondering how to spend the morning, until I saw you. You're not busy doing anything, are you?" "No, not at all," I answered. "Would you mind my coming with you?" he asked, before I had finished speaking. "Not at all," I lied. "But I'm going to the dentist." "Then I'll come with you," he answered. "There's always plenty to read in the waiting room."
Passage 69. But not murder. I was being tested for a driving license for the third time. I had been asked to drive in heavy traffic and had done so successfully. After having been instructed to drive out of town, I began to acquire confidence. Sure that I had passed, I was almost beginning to enjoy my test. The examiner must have been pleased with my performance, for he smiled and said, Just one more thing, Mr. Eames. Let us suppose that a child suddenly crosses the road in front of you. As soon as I tap on the window, I want the car to be stopped immediately. I continued driving, and after some time, the examiner tapped loudly. Though the sound could be heard clearly, it took me a long time to react. I suddenly pressed the brake pedal hard, and we were both thrown forward. The examiner looked at me sadly. "Mr. Eames," he said in a mournful voice, "you have just killed that child."